Well, I hope wherever you're hearing this show tonight, you're safe. You're not getting hit by too much unstable weather, but it's out there with these massive, you know, warm, moist fronts out there creating storms and stuff. So if you're going through that tonight, bring us along with you on Coast to Coast, and we'll get you through to dawn. And I want to give a shout out to all the people that I met today at the Minnesota State Fair who mentioned Coast to Coast. A lot of Coasties there. And the whole state fair, county fair thing going on in a big way. Interesting to see some of the trends that are happening. And I made a point to try to go by and see some of the sideshow acts after a show we did a couple of weeks ago on Coast to Coast. Couldn't find any. But I'm still looking, maybe sometime next week. You know, mysticism is something we talk about from time to time on the show. The occult, too. I'm big on mysticism. The occult sometimes leaves me a little cold. But there's an expert tonight on both. He is a founding member of the group Blondie, Gary Lachman. And coming up after an hour or so, we'll talk with him about Carl Jung, the one of the founding fathers of modern psychology. But he was also a mystic. As much as he resisted being called it, he was it. And many people consider him to be kind of the godfather of the New Age movement as it exists today. But that's not all that this show is going to be about coming up next hour. Carl Jung and Gary Lachman both touch on some very interesting topics along the way. As he's writing about Jung and as I'm reading about what Gary Lachman has written in other books, I'm discovering that there is a lot more about the occult and mysticism that's still current in our society today. Gary wrote a book called Politics and the Occult, The Left, the Right, and the Radically Unseen. We'll talk about that coming up next hour. But also just the use of magic for political purposes. It's a very interesting argument, and Gary makes it, and we'll talk about that with him coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. But first, this hour, the new movie is called The Big Uneasy. It comes out Monday night. It's the latest from Harry Shearer, a one-night-only affair all across the country, one night of showings, and then available on DVD. We'll talk about Harry Shearer's investigation into what happened in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, how it could happen again, and what are the stories that were happening in town that nobody was being told about through the mainstream media outside of the people who are living it. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Well, before I go any further, I also want to thank everybody for, well, not everybody, but a lot of people for buying copies of my book, which after about 10 days of sales, the book is Dizzy the Mutt with the Propeller Butt. And thank you, children's book, being very well received. And I think we broke the 1,000 mark, or we're close to breaking the 1,000 mark for 10 days. That's not bad. So thank you so much. And I am, you know, I'm grateful to have book signings. I'm no Harry Shearer, as Harry Shearer will be the first one to remind you of. Hey, Harry, how are you?
I'm good, Ian. Thank you. How are you?
Good. Author, novelist, director, satirist, musician, radio host, dancer, playwright.
Not a dancer.
No, I thought you did liturgical dance. That's not you.
I won't dance. Don't ask me.
Okay. Freelance Moyle?
No.
No? Okay. Small business owner?
Yes.
Yes. Papa John's franchise?
No.
Oh, okay. Is that the
Papa
record
John's
label?
Franchise.
Is that the record label then? Is that the small business owner?
No. Yes, the record label is the small business, yes.
Okay. And the producer of The Big Uneasy.
And the line of hookers, but, you know.
The Big Uneasy, one night only, Monday night, all across the country. Los Angeles born, but now New Orleans resident Harry Shearer gets the inside story of a disaster that could have been prevented. And you talk to whistleblowers. You talk to people in the Army Corps of Engineers. You talk to investigators who say the same flawed systems that existed that allowed for Hurricane Katrina to devastate New Orleans could happen again.
Well, first of all, Hurricane Katrina didn't devastate New Orleans. The failure of the federal federally designed and built a hurricane protection system devastated New Orleans. One of the lead investigators of one of the two investigations that occurred, Dr. Ray Seed of UC Berkeley, said it's the first sentence, first thing you see in the film, with the right kind of hurricane protection, the result of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans would have been very different. We call it, quote, wet ankles.
Yeah.
So that sort of sets the table for it. He and his partner, Bob B., also said in their final report on the matter, this was not a man-made, this was not a natural disaster, this was a man-made disaster. In fact, this was the worst man-made engineering disaster since Chernobyl. Chernobyl is the big leagues.
Right.
Yeah.
When you say partnered with that guy, what do you mean by that, just to...
They are associates, colleagues.
Okay.
UC Berkeley. What were you thinking?
No, I just, because partnered now means, you know, with his partner.
I know what you're thinking. Yeah.
Well, I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. I just didn't know what,
I know.
That's what you're saying.
Okay. You're a radio talk show host. You think like that.
I don't know why you say it with that kind of derision.
Yes, you do.
I pick up that subtext in there. That's not.
No, it's text. It's text.
There's no sub?
No.
You didn't sub
right
that?
Out there.
The movie One Night Only, why only Monday night across the country? If you are, if you're naming names, if you're blowing the lid off this investigation, if you're, you know, if you're schooling the major media on the story that they haven't been telling, why only one night?
Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, at the end of August, beginning of September, it's still summertime. Summer blockbusters want movie theaters. It's more advantageous in terms of the number of theaters we could get to say, just give us Monday night, okay? And then you can go back to showing, you know, Fish 3D or whatever you're showing.
Piranha 3D. Thank you very much.
What?
Piranha. Piranha 3D.
But not just Piranha. How about Special Trout 3D?
I didn't see that one.
How about
Special Trout
3D? There's a whole world of... Anyway, the other reason is that, you know, this is a moment in time, the fifth anniversary, and I saw this coming because I know the media pretty well, when they are rerunning all the old footage, bringing back some of the old punching bags. Here's Ray Nagin, here's Mike Brown, and most crucially, retelling the old version, which is Big Storm, City Below Sea Level, enough said. And I just thought, while that's fresh in people's minds before it's been imprinted into a long-term memory, that it would be advisable to say, hey, give me 90 minutes of your time, and I'll tell you. I won't tell you. I'll let you hear from the experts, the investigators, the eminent scientists and engineers who spent a year of their lives finding out why this thing happened. That's the one question the national media have never bothered to ask, is why did this happen? They'll show you suffering people, but they don't seem to be interested in investigating why. And as a matter of fact, when we early on inquired if HBO was interested in this show, they said, gee, that sounds sort of Nat Geo, doesn't it?
Meaning, Nat Geo.
Nat Geo. That's kind of Nat Geo, isn't it?
Well, so they talk about you the way you talk about me as a talk show host.
With that same tone of voice.
The same tone of voice. You notice that? How's that feel?
Yeah. It feels good for me to sort of voice it and get out of my system.
So, again, the movie is The Big Uneasy, One Night Only, then coming out in DVD?
Ultimately, yes. It'll be a little bit time and video on demand. And, you know, I mean, listen, my goal in making this film is very simple. As a New Orleanian, I felt that this city had lost control of the narrative of its own near destruction. And the reason is I'll tell you what one major television news anchor told me when I asked, sort of point blank, why the viewers of your broadcast not know why New Orleans flooded. And the answer was, we just feel the emotional stories are more compelling for our audience. So, yeah.
That seems kind of like the Olympics. It's not supposed to be,
well,
right?
They've turned it all into the Olympics in a way, you know. As I say, they'd rather show you, you know, endless footage of people suffering than take a moment to tell you why this happened. So anyway, I knew the leaders of the two investigations because I'd had them on my radio show. And I knew this whistleblower from inside the Corps of Engineers. Similarly, I'd had her on my radio show. So when I saw President Obama last October come to New Orleans at a town hall meeting and say, sort of make a sidelong reference to the flooding as a natural disaster, my first thing happened is my head exploded, and the second thing that happened was I thought, what can I do about this to help the city? What we know here happened sort of gained national traction, and the decision was made to make a documentary. And fortunately, because I think earned the trust of these people, the investigators and the whistleblower, I was able to sort of fairly quickly say, would you like to participate in this? I think you'll trust me to tell your story correctly.
We're talking with Harry Scheer, fresh from the Restoring Honor to America rally today in Washington, D.C.
I was at the Depriving America of Honor rally.
Oh, is that what it was? Across the street? Okay.
Yeah, because I don't know if you know Newton's third law, the law of conservation of honor.
Oh, no, I didn't. Okay. So let me ask you about the actual cause then. I mean, what do we have, a list of 5, 10? I mean, how many factors played into the devastation of New Orleans?
I'll just cut you short there and start my answer.
why should today be any different than yesterday?
First of all, it's important for me to point out that none of this is what I'm saying. What do I know? I'm a guy from the comedy world. But I basically got out of the way, and the movie is told through the eyes and the words of these people, these two lead investigators, one from UC Berkeley, one from LSU, and this whistleblower. The short answer to your question is 4.5 decades of catastrophic engineering design and construction errors and flaws by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, which was told by Congress after Hurricane Betsy in 1965, build a system that will protect New Orleans from the maximum probable hurricane. Instead, they built a system over 4.5 decades, riddled with flaws, not yet complete at the time of Katrina, that almost killed New Orleans. Kind of a error in the mission there. And they go into great detail about the exact nature of the flaws. We don't get, don't be afraid. The movie is not an instructional film in engineering, but some of the crucial ones are that after Congress says build something to protect the city from the maximum probable hurricane, the Corps, as its standard against which designs would be made, had this thing called the Standard Project Hurricane. And they decided for this statistical model to throw out all of the most severe then recent hurricanes as statistical anomalies, outliers. That won't happen again. So from the very beginning, the thing was designed down below the level which Congress had said you have to protect the city. Then they made a series of miscalculations about the nature of the soil, about how deep things had to be dug to reach solid soil that would anchor flood walls. They ignored changes from the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey in terms of sea level, so they built levees too low. A litany of errors and problems. U.S. federal judge Stanwood Duvall, in the only lawsuit to come to trial coming out of the flooding, this is to do with the building of a navigation canal called the Mr. Go, which critics said from the very beginning was going to destroy the wetlands to the east of New Orleans and funnel storm surge and salt water directly to the heart of the city. Said the Corps was reckless and negligent and had known as early as 1988 in internal memos that this thing was a disaster waiting to happen.
Okay, then if they knew all of that, I mean, knew it, not just thought it, not just suspected it, but
had it on paper.
Had it on paper, had knowledge of of its, of this impending disaster, why didn't they do something about it?
It's a great question and a lingering question. I don't pretend in a 90-minute film to see into the minds of a very large and very powerful federal agency that is willy-nilly in charge of the water policy of the United States, although they do that water policy one pork barrel project at a time, as one of the experts in the film who's knowledgeable about the Army Corps of Engineers tells us. This is the way they do business. They basically reassure the public that things are fine. They're doing that right now. And yet they have flaws in their work. They don't look forward. They don't look wide enough to see the environmental consequences. The Mr. Go Canal that I mentioned earlier was an environmental nightmare, and they were warned about that. But they serve a particular function. As I say, they do pork barrel projects. They are the kings of pork barrel. When your congressman comes home at election time, he brags about, look at this bridge I got you. Look at this dam I got you. Look at this canal we got. And he's particularly bragging to business interests who can benefit from those projects and who can benefit from the contracts that the Corps lets out. The Corps has basically got Dr. Bobby of UC Berkeley, who started working for the Corps at the beginning of his career, says they've hollowed it out. It's not a world-class engineering organization anymore. They outsource most of their work. They contract it out. So it's the United States Corps of Contract Administrators, basically.
This is a movie event coming up on Monday night. You can link up to Harry's website by going to coasttocoastam.com. It's specifically set up for you to be able to find a theater near you that's showing The Big Uneasy one night only, Monday night. Then it'll show on Nat Geo, and then it'll come out.
No, it will not.
DVD. I thought you said it was very Nat Geo.
Well, that's what HBO said.
Okay. So it'll just go right.
You know, they meant the hat salesman, Nat Geo.
That guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I went to RottenTomatoes.com, and I didn't see any reviews up, but I'd heard that The Big Uneasy was getting good reviews, but you have no tomatoes. You have no tomatoes.
Zero tomatoes so far, yeah.
Yeah. What is up with that?
Zero lettuce, too, though. So.
Yeah, well, all you have to do is get 11 tomatoes, and you did better than Marmaduke.
Well, here's
just saying.
Fingers
just
crossed.
Saying. But honestly, I heard you got a good review from the L.A. Times, and you've gotten some good reviews.
Yeah, the L.A. Times, as far as what I'm told. You know, it's difficult to get a lot of reviews for a movie that's showing one night only in theaters. A lot of newspapers have a policy against that, so I'm very grateful for any reviews we've gotten, but...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the last M. Night Shyamalan movie got one night only.
That wasn't the plan. That
wasn't
the result.
No, that wasn't I think afterward he said it was the plan.
Yeah, of course. His plan was to say that afterwards. But, you know, the people who I cover in the movie whose opinion I really value because, you know, I don't do this for a living have said that they felt very pleased that the story was told honestly and clearly, and it wasn't trivialized, and yet it's very clear and understandable, and it's not, as I say, an instructional film. It's a great-looking film. I got a wonderful cinematographer to shoot it. There's great animation in it. There's great music from a lot of New Orleans musicians, a great score. Everything to try to use the tools of motion picture making to make it a movie experience, not a lesson.
Right, and I'm not saying that he's a tool, but you got a lot of famous people coming in, like Brad Pitt, to do some voiceover work on it too.
Not
right?
Like Brad Pitt, Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt, like
yeah, you could say like Brad.
So
Pitt.
Like him, that it is him.
Yes, it is him. Brad Pitt, Jennifer Coolidge, Wendy.
John Goodman.
Hmm?
John Goodman?
Goodman is on screen in the film. The people, Brad Pitt, Jennifer Coolidge, and Wendell Pierce. Are voicing the words of people who, in one case, didn't want to be filmed, or they're voicing the conclusions of the two reports. So very, very valuable contributions they made.
By the way, just because it popped up in the news, saddened to hear about the death of Martin Short's wife.
Yeah, horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, Martin Short is in the most... You know, famous Saturday Night Live sketch that you did that people still talk about, the famous male synchronized swimming sketch with Martin Short. So yeah. I don't know if you remain close to him over the years, but I know that
we're in touch. I was stunned though to find they'd kept Nancy's illness a very closely held secret, and only very few people knew about it. And I was just shocked and stunned. She was a wonderful woman. A great talent in her own right, who sort of, you know, was a huge, huge support to Martin. They had a great marriage. They have four wonderful children. It's a horrible thing.
And that sketch that will live on forever, the male synchronized swimming sketch from Saturday Night Live, and that's one of your few happy memories from that year at Saturday Night Live?
I would say one of my only. Yeah, no, I have two or three.
Two or three.
Michael, Chris, and I sort of premiered The Folksman on Saturday Night Live that year, too. So.
Was that your Eat, Pray, Love year, do you think?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, just check. All right, so I want to ask about the recent revelations that Frontline came out with. They were almost charges. Did you see any of the Frontline special on New Orleans earlier?
This is the story about the New Orleans police. I'm familiar with the investigations that ProPublica and the Times-Picayune have done. I didn't see
Yeah, I want to ask you about that as it pertains to the perception of what happened in New Orleans after the levee broke. Okay, I want to ask you about how the people of New Orleans feel about the way in which they're portrayed in these ongoing reports too, and we'll get to that next. Harry Shearer on Coast to Coast, and then we'll delve into the mysticism and the occultism of Carl Jung and American politics too next hour on Coast to Coast. We're talking with Harry Shearer about his new documentary, The Big Uneasy, which has the Army Corps of Engineers in its crosshairs. The movie highlights how much advance notice the engineers had that this wasn't going to work and it would result in, well, exactly what happened. And we'll talk more about that with Harry coming up in just a second. One night only showing of this film Monday night, and you can link up to the showing nearest you by going to coasttocoastam.com, going up into the upper left-hand corner. Click onto that tab there that says The Big Uneasy. And when you get to Harry's website, take it from there to find the theater near you that's showing it Monday night before it comes out on DVD sometime down the road. And you can talk with Harry coming up in just a second. Coming up after the top of the hour, Gary Lachman, a founding member of Blondie and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and an expert on the occult and mysticism and Carl Jung and politics and so much more coming up on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. We're talking about Harry Shearer's latest film project, The Big Uneasy. You can click onto that cool picture of Harry in a hat. You look a little bit like Inspector Gadget in that hat.
I know, but I sound more like the announcer for Coast to Coast AM.
That's pretty good.
Call east of the Rockies, go west of the Rockies, and dial now.
We're about to do that. We're gonna grab some people for you here in just a second. So the Big Uneasy, one night only, Monday night. I was talking about the Frontline special, though, that was called Law and Disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an investigation into the police shootings that seem to be authorized. The feds are looking into it. The locals are looking into the feds. The feds are looking into the locals. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff going on. But generally, what is the feeling in New Orleans about how the police acted after the levees broke out and the looting started and all the other stuff?
You know, I think it's a complicated story. The police department had a bad reputation during the 1990s. They had gotten somewhat better, but there were still people who were in the force from that era. The first thing that happened when the levees broke and the flooding started was the cutting off of all forms of communication. Officers were on their own. There was no command and control anymore. In fact, people on the west half of New Orleans were breathing a sigh of relief that they had dodged the bullet, while people on the east half of New Orleans were under 18 feet of water. There was just no communication. That's not to excuse any misbehavior or criminal behavior, but it's to explain that officers suddenly the bad apples may have reverted to their former practice, given the lack of command and control. Some very bad things happened here. I should say that New Orleanians are also really upset with the fact that the former mayor and the former police chief went on television, most notably Oprah's show, and just recited rumors that they had heard about what was going on in the Superdome.
Right.
Almost all of which turned out not to be true.
The rapes, the murders, the other things that just weren't happening.
Weren't happening. You know, when I heard those, I was in Los Angeles. I thought, I don't know, I'm not there, but that's not the city I know. And it turns out that it wasn't.
Right, right. And yet in your new movie, The Big Uneasy, you do have a chance to talk to some people. Didn't you? I hear rumors that you were able to grab the recently renominated Senator John Vitter.
Senator David Vitter.
David Vitter, sorry, thank you.
I didn't talk to him. We have a clip in the film. That, you know, the crucial thing to me, one of the crucial things, is that this not be seen as a partisan political document. As I said, what happened in New Orleans was baked in under administrations of both parties over 4.5 decades by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. This is not a Democratic problem. This is not a Republican problem. It's an American problem. It doesn't just happen in New Orleans. The Army Corps builds levees that supposedly protect more than 100 cities around the country, most notably Sacramento seems to be in a bit of trouble. So it was important for me to put in a wonderful sequence in which Senator Vitter, a Republican, is questioning the head of the Army Corps about why they're insisting on a what they admit is a technically not superior solution to part of the new, improved protective system that CBS and CNN have been telling America is just so wonderful. And it's really a great sequence where Senator Vitter is clearly not doing the thing that you see so often in these hearings, which is asking questions written by staff. He's pursuing a line of questioning because he knows what he's talking about, and the guy from the Army Corps of Engineers is just trying to dodge the issue, and it's quite compelling.
And that's in the movie, The Big Uneasy, opens up this Monday night. I went to Brad Pitt's IMDb page.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't list him as being in your movie. He says it doesn't say he's in the movie, Brad mm-hmm. Pitt.
And what are you trying to say?
Are we sure this movie exists? It's one night only.
Are you sure Brad Pitt's IMDb page exists?
That's a better question.
Thank you.
I hadn't thought about that. I'll ponder that while I grab Blair, wildcard line in Sedona, Arizona, for Harry Shearer on Coast to Coast. Blair?
Hi, Ian and Harry.
Hi.
My nomination for greatest American philosopher currently is Mo of the Three Stooges when he said, "Wait a minute, fellas, we're getting no place fast." You know, as a possible reflection of the current state of what's happening now, Theodore Roosevelt had a autobiography. And
Was he in the Three Stooges?
Yeah, this is a Republican president, Ian.
He was the fourth stooge.
He's the fourth stooge. Go ahead.
And just about a 30-second bit here, if I could paraphrase what Theodore Roosevelt said that compares the 19th century, the last 25 years of the 19th century, with what's happening now. And here it is. And I want your comments on it. A riot of individualistic materialism under which complete freedom for the individual turned out in practice to mean perfect freedom for the strong to wrong the weak. The power of the mighty industrial overlords had increased with giant strides, while the methods of controlling them through the government remained archaic and therefore practically impotent. President Theodore Roosevelt, a Republican.
No, a Democrat.
No.
Oh,
Theodore. Theodore Roosevelt. You're right. I'm sorry.
And by the way, it's Roosevelt.
Yeah, that one was right. I got my Roosevelt's
mixed up. That side of the family pronounced it Roosevelt. Ian?
Yes.
What? Comment?
I don't know that has anything to do with Republican or Democrat. I mean, I think that's kind of silly in a way. I mean, a lot of whether he would be even considered a Republican today is a larger question.
Well,
but
the bull moose later on.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know that I quite get if that's the point of the point. I don't get that point. But
I think the point was the wild card line.
Okay. We'll go to Wayne in Alexandria, Louisiana, who may have a comment more germane to this particular issue. The Big Uneasy, Wayne.
Yes, gentlemen. Good evening.
Hi.
Let me muddy the waters, if you will, for a minute. No pun intended.
Okay.
I'm in Alexandria, by the way. You probably know where Alexandria is. Is that
her?
About 4 hours north.
Mm-hmm.
My wife works at the medical center, VA medical center, here in Alexandria, and she has heard it from some of her co-workers, new co-workers from New Orleans. They had heard explosions, and they swear up and down that they blew the levees with dynamite. Now, if that's another whole take on the levee thing, I personally say, well, no, they wouldn't do that. I said, if you heard any explosions, it was probably from the levees collapsing or something like that.
Well, I've heard that before, Harry. Did you look into that at all? Did you hear anything about that?
Well, look, I'm not an investigator. I relied on the heads of 2-year-long independent forensic engineering investigations that from major universities that went into every piece of the evidence at 53 breaches across New Orleans. You know, the dynamiting story goes back to 1927 when it did happen, when it's absolutely incontrovertible that the city fathers of New Orleans, fearing that was a time when the Mississippi River flooded. Floodwater was coming from the north in the river, and the city fathers of New Orleans saw that the only way possibly to save the city, they might have been wrong, was to relieve the pressure on the city by dynamiting levees south of the city in Plaquemine Parish. That's documented. And that story has resonated through time. And when people hear loud noises, there was a barge in the Lower Ninth Ward which crashed into the Industrial Canal levee after it had breached. And people may have heard that. But there was no, this was not a river flood. This water was not coming from the river. The water was coming from the opposite direction. I've never heard any reason why anybody would have benefited from dynamiting any levees in this particular setup. And none of the engineers and scientists that have investigated the evidence has come up with any indication that that's what happened.
Well, I could be wrong on this, but wasn't the accusation at the time a kind of ethnic cleansing, if you will, by flooding the traditionally black wards?
Yeah, but, you know, that's based on television coverage, which only showed you black people suffering. Television cameras didn't get 10 miles east to St. Bernard Parish, a white flight parish, a white suburban community of lower middle class and working class white workers. 99% of the housing in St. Bernard Parish was demolished by the flooding.
Right.
White well-to-do areas, black well-to-do areas, poor white areas, poor black areas, poor Vietnamese areas, well-to-do. I mean, 80% of a metropolitan area was flooded. There was very little discretion shown in terms of who got flooded out, and you know, it wasn't very selective. Now, that being said, obviously, people with more resources, family, friends, neighbors, volunteers, insurance companies, personal money, the occasional compensation grant from government, people with any kind of resources had a better, easier time recovering and rebuilding than people who didn't. And that may have had as I think documented, has had an effect in changing the ethnic balance of the city. But very slightly. It's still a majority black city.
You would find out more about this new movie, The Big Uneasy, by clicking onto our website, coasttocoastam.com. Go from there. Harry will link you up there with a theater near you that's showing the movie. Peter is in Bellingham, Washington, west of the Rockies.
Hey, how y'all doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. I've worked off and on out of New Orleans, starting in early 80s. Worked offshore, worked in trying to help recover after Hurricane Katrina. The problem with there's always been a very, very bad problem in New Orleans, and corruption would be on the East Bank and the West Bank, even with Harvey Gretna. Those police officers have always had a really, really bad reputation, and they uphold it.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason, see, even I listened to a commercial the other night on TV where they're saying that they are wanting to go in and rebuild, say, like the Ninth Ward, but they're not going to say it's the welfare, the people who, there were really, really a lot of people in these areas that were on welfare.
Okay.
They're just not going to put the money back into the welfare system. They're going to do it. They weren't doing it before when I was there after Hurricane Katrina.
Okay.
A lot of the African-American people there were really complaining as to how bad they were being treated.
Well, let's get Harry's response there. Go ahead, Harry.
If your home has been flooded out, you might well be complaining about how you're being treated. 53%, I believe, is the statistic of the homes in the Lower Ninth Ward were owner-occupied, which is a very high percentage in New Orleans, which is very largely a city of renters. Lower Ninth Ward, these were people who had, I think they were third or fourth generation homeowners. These were the people who worked in the hospitality industry. They were musicians. It was not notably a neighborhood that was particularly loaded with welfare recipients. There were no housing projects in the Lower Ninth Ward. The housing projects were in other parts of the city.
Christine, maybe our last call for Harry Shearer on Coast to Coast.
She's Are we at last call?
Yes, good morning.
Hi, Christine.
I have two questions. Did you hear anything about 200 cops deserting their posts after the levee broke, and also that three or more cops committed suicide?
I know there were police suicides, and I know that there were police who not only abandoned their posts but left the city. I mean, and there's no excusing the latter, and yet you have to understand that, as I said before, the entire structure of the city had come apart. There was no communication. There was no command. There was no information. Every police officer was basically on his or her own, and some of them couldn't take the pressure of that. It was an emergency situation that nobody clearly had prepared for.
Well, Christy, did you say they did commit suicide, several cops?
No.
I think there are documented reports of several New Orleans police officers committing suicide.
You know, you kind of felt like it, when you're even just watching it from here, I mean, it just looked like a city that had entered into some lower ring of hell. I mean, this was disorienting and feeling abandoned.
You know, 80% of a city is under 6 to 12 feet of water. And one of the things we do in the movie is we have animation in the beginning that shows exactly where and when different parts of the city flooded. And what I think surprises people outside is how much of the city flooded and how fast it happened. It happened radically fast before people had a chance to even realize what was going on, which accounts for panic, confusion, the panoply of bad human behavior, as well as an enormous amount of really amazing help and compassion people were showing each other. That both things were happening.
Is that 3D animation?
It is 2D, but you feel it's like the third dimension is there.
Okay. See, if you'd gone with 3D animation, you might get more than just one night of showing it in theaters.
Yeah. Is Piranha 3D still playing?
It is. It did very well, actually.
Well,
got 87% in Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Hey, let me ask you, though. I mean, let's say it's a big hit, The Big Uneasy, this Monday night, find a theater near you.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a big hit, would you think about doubling the run and just showing it one more time? Or
Places. There's a theater in New Orleans that's added a second night already. There's a theater in New Orleans that's added more showings on Monday. The theaters have been told if you want to extend the run, if it's popular with you and you like it, you can continue to run it.
Okay,
but we're committed for the one night only.
Okay. And then what's next for Harry Shearer? What else are you working on?
Oh, another radio show right after this. What do you mean longer term?
Yeah, well, because you won't do this one for 2 hours.
That's right.
You'll go do another one after this one.
Well, it's a different audience, Ian. I have a television project in England that I'm going to start working on as soon as I get this done.
Okay, it's in 5 minutes. Let me ask you about this real quick. Do you think the response to the BP oil spill would have been different had it not been for Katrina, better or worse?
Wow. One would have thought it would have been better given the experience of Katrina than I think it turned out to be. I think people here feel it was slow in coming as well, and it was stunning because of the precedent of Katrina. One would have thought the lesson would have been learned.
Very good. Get an idea of what it was like and where the failures happened, how they would have been predictable, and how we can see the blueprint for this happening again in New Orleans. The movie is The Big Easy, one
Big
night
uneasy.
Only. The Big Uneasy. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I forgot that. I appreciate that. Always fun, Harry.
Thank you.
God bless you. Say hi to Judith for me.
I will.
Have a wonderful night. And there you go. Harry Shearer on Coast to Coast. Coming up next hour, Gary Lachman, one of the founding members of Blondie, but he's got a background in the occult and mysticism that's going to change the way you think about politics and more next on Coast to Coast.